Hello and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman, the founder of the Kabbalah Lam Association. Hello. Hello, Yael Eshed Harel. Hello. Today we'd like to talk to Rav Lightman about a very special topic, deep, profound, that really touches anyone who lives here in Israel, the gap between the religious and seculars. And when we talk about it, we don't want to talk about one sector or another. But we'd like to better understand these two entities, religious and seculars, that a part of these exists in each one of us. We'd like to better understand ourselves, our life, these two seemingly very different and distant life views that were kind of confused in between. So, Yael, please begin. So, I'll start from my own experience in terms of religious, secular. It's something that I'm thinking about for many years, dealing with for many years. Am I secular? How secular am I? And if I'm secular, then which of the Jewish or religious parts becomes a part of my secularity? What doesn't? And throughout life, I had this inner monologue with myself to this day. Who am I? Where am I inside this whole story? And I think that this is a conflict that exists in each one of us. We can see it on society. If we're talking about a society at the moment, then we can see it between the secular and religious societies. And even looking at polls from 2014, 50% define themselves seculars. 70% are traditional, meaning keep Jewish traditions but aren't religious, meaning there too have many factions. 13% keep the traditions and are religious, lightly religious. 12% religious, and 9% ultra-Orthodox religious. And there too you have many factions inside all that. Only 21% of Jewish population say that they don't keep any traditions, but also they keep sometimes traditions like doing the Brit, fasting on the Day of Atonement, celebrating Passover, meaning there is a whole big mixture going on here. And we'd like you to help us better understand that inner place inside us of religious, secular, and we're talking about two worldviews, where one is a religious one and the other one is a secular worldview. It's two completely different ideologies, two different forms of thinking. And the first question I'd like to ask you is, the religious and seculars represent two different worldviews. What are these two worldviews? The secular worldview, if you can call that at all, that there is a person who's secular. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. So the secular approach says that the whole world is governed by the laws of nature, and what we see is what there is and what we discover through science. And we have to accept the world as we do and to relate to it according to what we see and what we attain, and not to rely on there being some fate, higher force, life after our life, and so on. If we'll reveal it, we'll take it into account. If it doesn't, it's just our imagination, fantasies, that it says something here, there, and Hollywood is making movies about it, and many books were written about it, and so on. Meaning, we're talking about a realistic approach, as if. That is the secular approach. Inside this approach, we have an entire range of attitudes that result from a person's attitude towards himself, towards society, towards the environment, but it's no longer in accordance with status between the religious and seculars. The religious approach says there's a higher force that created the world and gave us special conditions that we have to keep. And if we keep them according to his desire, then we get some kind of a reward. And if we don't keep it, then we'll be punished. There are also different forms of relations towards the higher force and reward and punishment and a person's participation in it and free choice and so on and so forth. But still, there's an attitude that we have to take into account here. Some kind of a higher force, higher thought, higher purpose, some higher plan, the purpose of creation, purpose of life. And this puts a person no longer in the center of creation, but that higher force or the creator, or it doesn't matter how you call him. He is in the center of creation because he's arranging everything and governing everything. And my reward is according to the efforts that I make in this world. And so I have to constantly take him into consideration, into account. And that's how I live. Meaning the religious approach, it necessitates a person to make calculations, not with blind laws of nature, but with the higher desire, which is something completely different. And if it's the higher desire, then here, maybe I can pray, I can ask, I can be ashamed, I can correct myself, take a step back, take a step forward, as if I repent, and so on and so forth. And here we have plenty of beliefs and religions and humankind that existed throughout history, and some of them no longer exist. Besides Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. That's more or less. Now, we see that all of this greatly influences the world, humanity, that we're in this vortex for the past 2,000 years as a result of the birth of Judaism after the destruction of the temple, and as we see it now, it's changing all the time, and afterwards came Christianity, and then Islam, and all these religions are struggling each other, and they have, I'd say, very complicated relations. And besides, in each and every religion, we have plenty of denominations, suppose Christianity. We have the Catholic and the Protestant and the Russian Orthodox Church and more, and also with the Islams, the Shiites and the Sunnis, and so on and so forth. And also in Judaism, we have many factions. Like we saw in Russia, that they wanted to destroy each other by complaining to the Tsar on each other, the Mitnagdim and the Hasidim, the Hasids and the opposers. And to this day, here in Israel, you have similar things. And here we have such a vast range of things. Every synagogue is something else. And not even talking about the collision between the secular and religious that can't arrange their lives so that they don't disturb each other, but they want to impose a way of living on each other. And I'm not going to arrange things here and say who's right and who's not and in what way. It's not my business. And I never was engaged in these things, and I never thought that it's possible. But what's going on to this day is is that if, suppose, I come to the U.S. or Europe, and the U.S. it's more conspicuous, there we see that there's not that much of a collision between the religious and seculars. They're all Jews. Then either you go and pray in your synagogue every day, or you come only on Shabbat, or you come only on holidays, or three times a year when it's a custom to come, or only on the Day of Atonement. It doesn't matter. We're all Jewish, belong to Judaism, more or less, but there's no collision between us. And why isn't it so in Israel? Because here, religion is connected to government, struggle, regime, power, coercion, and therefore here, there is a common mutual place where we collide, and that's really a problem. It is. Meaning throughout the years, it became worse and worse because each side sees that the other side wants to gobble up what they deserve or what they don't deserve, and we see that the radicalization in society is growing up to hatred and separation, a kind that we've never experienced in Israel. Before we're getting into, I don't think that it's a problem of different worldviews, like you asked about, that there are two worldviews here. I don't think that that's the problem. I think that it became more a problem of power, control over our lives, how each part wants to rule the other part and control the country and arrange the country so it will serve him, whether it's the religious part or the secular part. That's the problem. The struggle is over the country, over the regime, over power, over the treasury, over how to use the country for our own benefit, whether it's the religious or secular public. This is actually the problem. This is how I see it, even though that I'm looking at it from the side. I'm not a part of it at all. It's only from what I hear from far, far away about what's going on. I can't say that I understand this and that I'm a specialist and that it comes from research and study in the field. So first of all, there is data that supports what you just said, that the word is that one of the greatest tensions in Israeli society is the tension between the religious and seculars. Today we're talking about 52%, even more, that define this tension as a very strong one, and 80 and something percent are talking about a strong or medium tension, meaning it's something that became something very acute in society. But before we go there, I want to ask you. You talked about a religious and secular worldview. Today, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. Because if we're fighting over the treasury, over different benefits, then it doesn't matter. His perception, my worldview, doesn't matter. We have one treasury that each one wants to divide it differently, so it has nothing to do with a worldview. Before we get into that, this is something that doesn't exist only in Judaism. It exists also in Christianity, in Islam, in every religion. There is religious and secular. No, but there's no country there that they can say, I want to enjoy it, and the other says, I want to enjoy it. Religion is not linked to the government. There is a disconnection between religion and state. It's not like here in Israel. Like in the U.S., suppose. I can be a Christian, or a Jew or a Muslim, and I can be a Hindu or whoever and whatever. No one cares who and what I am, because I don't come to the government and say, because I'm religious, I deserve this and that, because I'm from this or that religion. No problem if you want to build a church or a mosque or a synagogue. Get together, build one. It's not that the government has to provide you with something. So if there is a disconnection between religion and state, all these things don't exist. Before we delve into the tension, I'd like to better understand on a principle level about these two identities. One identity, and of course it includes many other denominations and factions, it's very broad, but in general we talked about two identities, the secular identity, where man is in the center, it's a realistic, scientific approach to life, what you see is what there is. If I don't see, I'm not taking into account. And the other approach that says that there's a higher force which is in the center of creation, and I have to constantly arrange my relations with him because he decides. And if I want to enjoy this force, I have to do different things, and then I get different... He does different things for me. And if I'm not in touch with that higher force, or I don't do what he wants, I don't get what I could get. I get a kind of a punishment instead. But he is in the center, not the human. Right. And these two perceptions exist in each one of us too. Right. I want to talk about my way of thinking as a secular. As I said in the beginning of the show, these two things exist inside me, but at the moment I define myself as a secular and not religious, because the way I see it, a religious person is he who keeps the mitzvot, and I don't. And from this point of view of a secular, we have many confusions, because I don't keep the mitzvot on the basic level, but my son did have a bar mitzvah, I do have a mezuzah at home, I respect Jewish religion, I fast on the Day of Atonement. As a child, I went to the synagogue with my dad, who was even more secular than I am. Inside me, there are parts that are also drawn to that, and inside me, there's a greater part, I feel, that is drawn to the secular part, where there are no mitzvot, and I'm not obligated to anyone, and what I see is what there is. And inside this whole mixture of parts inside me, I'm asking myself, who am I? Who am I, the secular woman? What does it mean? What? These are very deep and profound questions. I don't think that a person is capable of answering them, because we're really in a state where our psychology, where we're engaged in self-contemplation and inner research, and we can't know as a result what motivates us. Suppose you fast on the Day of Atonement. Why? It's not because you identify with the people that are fasting, even though that most of the people do fast. And why? Then suddenly there is a kind of a faith, belief, some fear, taking into consideration some blind fate or a guiding hand or something. And that's how it is with everyone. I don't think that there are so many seculars, really, that are so anti, that on the inside, from time to time, don't have this inner kind of scrutiny like you have on the Day of Atonement and the mezuzah. And if today you're standing trial or something, then maybe you kiss the mezuzah. Well, not to exaggerate, but yeah, I fast. We can measure these things. If you have something crucial during the day and you leave home, maybe you kiss the mezuzah. Maybe you're as if suddenly in some kind you want to have some kind of a connection with the higher force. Right. So that's no longer called secular. Secular is, I understand, I was secular because for me, there was no higher force in my field of view whatsoever besides nature. I studied, I researched, I was a part of science, and besides the forces of nature, I didn't see anything else. This is how I was brought up. And at the age of 30, more or less, when I started searching, when I kept on searching for the meaning of life after science and after everything, then I stumbled upon the wisdom of Kabbalah. And looking back, and it's really hard looking back now because it's psychologically hard, returning to the same attitude I had towards life and nature back then. So now, looking at it, I can't look at life that way. But still, I took into consideration, into account, only what I see. Only that. The world was the force of nature for me, which includes different forces, and that's it. And I didn't cleave onto it any desire or conditions or anything like religion does. And when I came to the wisdom of Kabbalah, there too, I discovered the same scientific approach, not a religious one, but a scientific approach that I'm going to research and a judge has only what his eyes sees and I'm included in the higher force, but the higher force is the force of nature. Elohim in Hebrew is godliness, and in Gematria, in its numerical value, it equals nature, and I keep these laws because these are the laws of nature. And this is what kind of confuses people, that the desire wants me or doesn't want me to do something. And this is the meaning of that the Torah spoke in the language of humans. So I don't understand, with respect to these two approaches, where does Kabbalah place itself? Kabbalah, the wisdom of Kabbalah is a science. It's a science that is dealing with bringing a person to the revelation of the general force of nature called Elohim, godliness. And where it says in the Torah that Elohim, the Creator, wants this or wants that, it's called that the Torah spoke in the language of humans. He wants it or doesn't want it. It's like saying about Earth, that I'm in the air and I fall onto Earth because Earth wants me, pulls me, that there's a desire here. A desire is a force, and then we talk about the forces inside a person, his desires, and the forces of nature, the desires of nature. So the desires of nature are the desire of the Creator, and the desire of a person is his own desire, and that's it. And also we're talking about systems. The system that the wisdom of Kabbalah teaches us about is how do we have to get along and belong ourselves to these systems. And it explains to us how to behave. And it has nothing to do with believing in something. It's about the revelation of the upper force, the revelation of the desire, and the revelation of the Creator. This is what we have to come to. So with this attitude, both the religions and the beliefs that there are several hundreds of those in humanity, and also science and secularism and religion and all of the, it doesn't matter, they can all come together under the approach of the wisdom of Kabbalah. You're saying that there is a higher force that's controlling everything. This I understand, because we're inside nature. But where's the realistic approach? Why isn't it realistic? Only that the wisdom of Kabbalah or the Torah tells us about the rules that are operating on us very realistically, only we don't identify them yet. But a Kabbalist who starts researching according to the procedures that he learns from the wisdom of Kabbalah. He discovers these forces. He discovers the network of forces that are influencing him. And for him, it's the field of research. That's called the revelation of the Creator, which is the main thing that a person has to do in this world. Know the Creator, thy God, and serve Him, meaning learn these laws of the complete nature and behave correctly so that you will be well off. So let's summarize. We started the show with you explaining what the secular perception is, then the religious perception, and now you're explaining the Kabbalistic perception. Can you arrange them one by one? I say that the Kabbalistic perception includes all other perceptions, arranges them correctly, cleans them, cleans all the dust off them, because people don't know what they're engaged in. We don't know ourselves. We don't know godliness. So we simply live from habit, by inner urges. And the wisdom of Kabbalah, because it reveals all of reality, all of nature, the hidden nature, the Creator, that our goal is to reveal Him. And as a result, we reach a state where we have nothing to believe in. What we have to is to know. And from knowing, we can really keep the laws of nature and have a good life. And then we will have no collisions with each other. We'll all feel that we belong to the same nature. And besides that, on the way, the wisdom of Kabbalah, it necessitates us, in order to reveal nature for ourselves, to go into a connection up to the point of love another as thyself. And this is maybe something that we'll talk about next time. Yeah, our time's unfortunately up. We still have plenty of questions. We'll be happy to talk to you again. Thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.